So this is Art Musings with Love from Oxford, a podcast where we natter with local artists, learn about their processes, their work, and delve deep into creative, emotional, and business challenges. Basically the juicy bits, the dark underbelly of being an artist. I'm Carol Terrio, a painter focused primarily on watercolor and inks.
And I'm Sally Ann Stewart, a lino cut printmaker who loves depicting the beautiful city we live in. And we're kicking off our art careers and hoping to learn a few tips and tricks from those around us. And we thought you, dear listener, might like to join us. Allons-y.
Allons-y.
Okay, so today on Art Musings, Carol and I have the pleasure of speaking with artist Alex Singleton. Alex is a multidisciplinary artist with hands in many pots. And we're going to learn about his career and talk about his work. And then we'll delve deep into today's topic, which is making art versus family life.
Now, Alex Singleton has a pretty busy family life. He has twins, and we're going to learn all about that in a bit. But first, Alex Singleton, welcome to Art Musings.
Hello there.
We like to offer listeners a chance to be able to look at your art while we are chatting with you. So do you have an Instagram or a website that you'd like to promote especially?
Yeah. A.S. Birdman on Instagram.
A.S. Birdman on Instagram. Yeah. Perfect. So maybe we should dive in to you. Have you always been arty since you were a little wee guy?
Oh, yeah. Since I was about eight, perhaps, probably even younger. My school reports always said, great drawings, shame about all the other marks.
So you got to draw in school, though, because lots of kids don't have that opportunity in school.
Yeah. I mean, I was a bit of a dreamer anyway. My family lived out in Rome. So I think just trying to adapt to a different culture, I sort of became a bit introverted and just started drawing. So perhaps it's something to do with that, moving around a bit. My dad worked out there in the 70s until the 80s. So, yeah, I was sort of brought up there. And I think I was very inspired by the colours and the sound of a different language. It's kind of weird. Like, in a way, sometimes they say it's great to have travel, but also sometimes for a young one, it can be a little bit, with learning, it can confuse you a little bit as well. I still seem to struggle with it all. So I just ended up drawing all the time. I think that's how it started. Yeah.
Did you see drawing as a kind of almost a mate or a friend or like a companion?
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, at that age, I'm not quite sure if I felt that way. I just was always doodling and that's never really left me, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
I think we're all wired a different way. We're all unique on this planet, but we're all wired so differently. And we just, however much we want to fight nurture, we're sort of wired a certain way. Would you agree with that?
So there's something instinctive in you that was driven to make marks on paper.
Yeah. I think maybe a lot of artists would say the same, actually.
I would say all people would say they don't know anyone just quite like them, unless maybe if you're a twin, which we'll get to later.
Well, even twins have their little unique differences as well.
That's true. So you've lived all over, including Bristol, where you rented a studio in an old rundown police station.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah. So my wife, she did her teacher training down there a while back. This is going back about 8 years ago. And I went down with her and I just thought, this is a city where art's happening. I just actually wanted to do art. I'd always been working and doing my art, but I just needed like a year to just get on with art. And we managed to suss it. We lived in a tiny little flat, a tiny overpriced flat, and ate baked beans for a year. But
it turns out you can live off them. Who knew?
Yeah. You can, but let's put it this way. And fish fingers. But let's just put it this way: I can't look at another baked bean or fish finger as long as I live.
So, what would you do if you were invited to a dinner party and they went, "We've got baked bean casserole"?
Do you know what? I'd probably be all right. I'd probably be polite about it.
I know what to make you now. Okay.
Oh dear! But the police station was this amazing high-rise tower, but the basement was the cheapest room of all. It had very little light in it. It was cold. But it was somewhere to do art. And, of course, it's when I started getting really interested in street art. I was surrounded by it. I was fascinated by it, but I just didn't quite know how to approach it. And it wasn't until about 4 or 5 years later I started doing it myself. So
things take time to percolate.
It does. Well, actually, it takes time to get the confidence.
Yeah.
To work large and to work in urban spaces and to feel confident that you're not going to get arrested for doing it.
And feeling okay with, if it happens, being able to be cool and not freak out. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the trick to that is actually is to be as polite as possible and hand over your spray paints and just call it a day. Always be on the side with them. You will not have so much hassle. Do you know what I mean?
That's a really good tip.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I ask, Alex, what sort of work you were doing at that point, and then when you went to Bristol, what kind of things were you working on?
I did, well, I was two strands. So one strand was these A1 watercolour paintings. I was going up to Weston-super-Mare quite a bit because I was doing some voluntary work for a studio up there. So I started doing these paintings where I split them up with masking tape and did the same view, but like 10 times over. So they're sort of almost like Andy Warhol, repeat the same image, but in watercolours. And it was really, I did about a series of 20 of those. It just felt really interesting what I was doing there. And then the other aspect was I was doing large paintings on like fabrics and paper that were like street art. So I was using masking tape and that Dayglow kind of labelling to stick on them and spray paints and using those street marker pens to draw out these sort of shapes of people and sort of fantasy lands and stuff.
Yeah. So it was fairly large scale, it sounds.
Yeah, so it was the stem of street art, but I was doing it inside. I remember annoying some people upstairs because the spray paint like spread up the stairs, like about 2 or 3, 4 lobbies up this tower block. Yeah, got in a bit of trouble for that.
I bet, because they're like, we can't breathe.
It's fun. So yeah, Bristol was a real stem. It was also made me so aware of how art could vary and be different and the sort of amazing stuff people were creating in Bristol, just and the talent that was around. Because, you know, Oxford has talent, but when you go to somewhere like Bristol where there is so much talent, you're like, whoa, it sort of blows your mind, you know?
You then somehow moved from that to murals. Like, that's a big jump as well.
Yeah, well, there was a sort of, there's a few transient periods in between that. So I got back to Oxford and I wanted to start doing markets and selling cards and stuff. And I was selling ceramics as well. So I was like using the East Oxford Oxpots to make ceramic bits I could sell. And I was making cards to sell, like, images of Oxford and stuff.
Was that because consciously you wanted to be becoming more commercial or just you felt like you wanted to get out and meet people?
A bit of both. In a way, I felt like actually with markets, right, it's really, really hands-on. You just, you put your stuff there, you sell it. You know, like a lot of people swear that online you can sell things. I think it's a bit of a myth. I think sometimes the reality is you go out there and just sell it in the real world. You have markets, you chat to people, and actually that seemed the raw deal of being commercial with art is just to actually get out there and chat and actually and do it. You know what I mean?
Oh, I absolutely love it. That's one of my favorite things, being at markets. Even if you don't sell much, just that, yeah, chatting to people and making new contacts.
Definitely. I mean, I got murals through selling cards just by chatting. I was doing murals as well. And then I got really fascinated by letterpress because I wanted to do really, really nice, like smart cards on the back with like titles and ideas. And then I went off on another tangent. So I found this course you could do out in Nashville in Tennessee.
Was there nothing more local, Alex?
There's Richard Lawrence in East Oxford does letterpress.
Yeah, I've heard of him. I'd love to visit his studio or workshop. It sounds fascinating.
You imagine sort of walking back into another age. That's what it's like walking into his studio. But the thing I found in England is there are people doing letterpress, but it's very few and it's very niche. And I just wanted to go and learn it. And I found this course. It was free.
Wow.
And all I needed to do was an interview online. I sent them some images I'd done and I managed to go out there for 2 months.
Amazing.
Fantastic place. It's part of the Music Museum in Nashville. Within this museum, which has got the most fantastic costumes of famous musicians and cars that belong to musicians and guitars that belong to musicians, there's a shop called Hat Show Print, which is the original letterpress print shop in Nashville that moved about 5 or 6 times in its history. The reason that letterpress was large out there is because it's what you call a Bible Belt. They needed Bibles printing, and so letterpress became a really large thing over there.
Wow.
Anyway, so in Hatch Showprint, they've got literally 100-year-old wooden and lead type of all sizes and dimensions and the most beautiful machines.
I can see Sally right now. It's probably drooling.
Yeah.
Does sound amazing.
Yeah, like the Van den Kuik presses and clamshell presses, stuff like that. And they had this big monster machine called the Mealy machine, which was in this room that, when I say a room, it's like the size of like a bus garage.
Wow.
And it was deafening. But the people I met there were really, really great. And it was such an experience just being out there, going, seeing all the mute country music, going, meeting bands, going out to some raves and doing all this letterpress on the day.
Sounds fantastic.
This is the bit of the story you might be interested in. I came back and my wife was pregnant and we had twins on the way.
That's amazing / terrifying.
Yeah, so I went through this whole kind of letterpress thing, got back to Britain, and I bought myself a clamshell press from this old geezer, an Italian chap out in northwest London, who had tons of stuff. He sold me too much, and I drove the car down back to Oxford, and the car could hardly move. It was so weighed over. I then realised I had to get rid of about 3/4 of it because I had nowhere to keep it.
But you know what? I think that's a really good point, because a lot of my watercolour supplies comes from people that can no longer paint or no longer interested, and they have huge supplies, and the paint's still good. The paper is incredible.
Yeah.
A lot of the brushes are fantastic, and yeah, it's really one of those métiers that you can pass on the tools, you know, to new generations of it. It's really cool.
It's funny you should say that. My cousin, who died about 20 years ago, he was this fantastic artist and teacher living down in Hastings. And I got back in contact with his long-term partner, who's been writing a book about his life, and she sent me a basket of all his brushes and ink holders and stuff. And
you see,
just brought me right back to like how fantastic he was, and it just felt wonderful to have something that he had owned. You know, it's just
wow,
amazing. So I know how you, yeah, it's nice to actually inherit art stuff from other people.
I agree. I completely agree. Now, okay, are we ready for murals yet? Or
yeah.
Not yet? Okay, because that's how I know you. That's all I know about you, really. I remember the sunflowers, right?
Yeah. I bumped into Sally the other day in the supermarket, and we were chatting about what it is that makes an artist knowable and sellable.
Tell me the secret, please.
Well, what it came down to, right, is like, you'll never be found unless you go out there and do something. And sometimes you've got to do sort of slightly quirky things to get some notice. So my idea was to paint my house with a sunflower. And from that, it led on to was a guy called Pax, who runs the Cowley Carnival, said, could you do an online Skype? In the year when the carnival wasn't happening, we did sort of like an online thing with house floats around Oxford. And so he contacted me and did a kind of live thing about the mural I'd done on my house, which led to more sort of television coverage, newspaper coverage. And so what I think you've got to do sometimes is just come up with a slightly bizarre, quirky idea, which just gets you sort of noticed.
Do you think a podcast might pull it off?
Yeah. You know what? I love podcasts.
Me too.
Alex, what's the largest mural that you've done?
Good question. I would love to go larger, but I just haven't quite found the space or the sponsor yet.
But how many streets would you say your stuff is on? Or I mean, because you've got a lot out there. What would people know you most from, do you think?
I've done a lot of stuff under Iffley Bridge. I've done a lot of stuff in Redbridge. I've done a lot of stuff on the Littlemore roundabout. And I've done quite a lot of private commissions for people. I've done one up in off Holloway Road for an Italian chap. I did a school in Reading this summer near Tyrehurst. Mm-hmm. That was a very large one. That's a massive wall on the side of the school.
I'm so jealous. I want to do these. I have just, my biggest work that I've just done right now is an A1 card for the kids' school.
Come and join me.
I'm totally in.
So listen, I'm part of a group called Mess Graffiti Crew. All right. We do stuff all over Oxford. Go online to Open Walls Oxford, and we created a map of all the free walls in Oxford where anyone who's an artist who wants to work on a wall can go and work.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so...
That's very cool.
Yeah, please check it out. It's called Oxford Open Walls.
Yeah. I'm bagging my wall before I air the show, just saying.
And what, I mean, is there like a code amongst street artists? Can you, you know, should you never go next to someone else's art? Or because things, I've seen things that have been gone over by, you know, fresh stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I've had stuff up for it's gone in 3 days. That's normal. That's normal with street art. That there is this unsaid rule, you can go over people's work. There is not much of an issue about that. Sometimes people get grumpy, but to tell you the truth, it's free for all. If it's outdoor.
I couldn't do it. I think it's like, you know, some people are like diehard vegetarians or diehard non-drinkers or whatever. I just don't think I could do that, even if I didn't like it at all.
Oh, right.
It would be really hard. I think if I had like, you know, intense disagreement with the message that was there, that would be a different story. But maybe I'm just nascent in this field.
I'll give you an example. I was with my Mess Graffiti Crew gang one day. We were doing some stuff down Littlemore. And there's this other artist I love called Delicious 13. He's a Polish guy. He does incredible work. Anyway, one of my Mess Crew said to me, yeah, you just go over it. It doesn't matter. I said, no, I'll leave it. I really like it. I'll go on. It doesn't matter. So I started. And of course, Delicious 13 turns up.
Oh, no.
Really, really annoyed.
Of course. I'd be annoyed if I saw someone rubbing out my work that I, you know, that of 20 feet by whatever.
I try to patch up. I think we get on pretty well now. And I'm pretty much, I leave his stuff alone. He leaves my stuff alone.
I'll tell you what, a bag of flapjacks goes a long way.
Yeah. Well, with us crowd, it's usually like some music and company. So you get a boombox and the Bluetooth to your phone and you get these extension poles out and you start painting under the telescopic ladders. You're up there just going for it and you're listening to music. Usually with our crew it's like Motown, but
I love it.
Alex, is it mainly guys? The only other one I know is Big Orange M.
Yeah, so I've been painting with him for 7 years, and we went out to Cheltenham about 2 years ago for the Cheltenham Paint Festival, and we're under Bridges Painting. I met this fantastic all-girl crew, and I was like in awe because I'd never met an all-girl crew. I will put that in your notes at the end of this podcast because you've got to check them out. They are insane and brilliant, and they're so prolific. They do so much work, and they were so fun to chat to as well. Well, I teach street art at the Ruskin. So I take people down to the streets, groups, and we do work. So we do part stuff in classroom, part stuff on the walls. And I get quite a lot of girls coming along and doing it. We need an all-girl graffiti group in Oxford. We really need that.
Do you think the girls are confident about going out and doing that kind of thing on the street compared to the guys?
There are girls out there doing it. I just think for some weird reason it's a masculine thing. A lot of graffiti seems to be groups of guys doing it.
Well, you're going to have Carole on your crew now anyway, so the balance is going to shift.
Well, listeners, you've heard Alex. If you're interested in doing a bit of graffiti, get in touch. All the links are on the show notes. I think maybe it's time for us to move to our big topic of the day.
Definitely. Yeah. Alex, how are you doing for time?
I'm fine. Yeah, I'm fine. My wife's putting the kids to bed at the moment. I did the bath with them earlier, but then they ended up back downstairs eating pizza. So it was all went up.
Love a bedtime curveball.
You can guess our topic is making art versus family life.
Yeah, that's all about finding the pockets of time when you're not working and they're at school, which usually for me is a Monday. So
you used to do art, like, so what was your schedule pre-kids and how has it changed?
To tell you the truth, I was always generally in another job as well to try and make ends meet. So
I am in one now. I get it. Yeah.
The only difference nowadays is that I'm teaching art and I actually love my job, which I never used to. So before kids, all right, I was a bit, you're not so disciplined, all right? When you've got kids, you've got to sort of find a discipline to make it all work.
And you don't realise how much time you actually had.
Yeah, yeah, that's it.
In your old life.
What do they say? The youth is wasted on the young.
Yeah.
So.
It is. But then kids steal it from you when you're older. So, you know.
Gradually chip away at you.
So you have twins, right? So you have a double whammy in your set, in your family.
Yeah. They are adorable. Eddie and Dougie, the most adorable little boys. They're naughty and lovely and intelligent and creative and just normal. They're very typical boys, really.
And I guess they take no time at all.
They take all my time.
What sort of stage, because I've known friends who've had twins and surviving those early months and years is pretty much all you can do. At what sort of stage did you manage to get back into making some art?
I think it's actually when they started school.
Mm.
It was a bit harder when they were littler, but now that they're at their first year of their school, you know, it sort of gives me a kind of structure where I can find a day or two in between work and children to get on with stuff. They, you know, they're learning to do things like they're reading now and they can dress themselves now. A lot of things that were really hard when they were littler. Like, you know, when they were born, I was working night shifts in a college. I'd get home after a whole night and then I'd be changing nappies.
Oh, wow.
For most of the day. And that was like about 10 to 11 nappies a day, you know.
Yeah, that's what you want to smell first thing in the morning.
That's brutal.
But then there was the whole potty training them, which was absolute hell. and I guess it's just these different stages and you get through them, and then there's something else that comes along.
Yeah, there's always a new challenge.
I don't have children. And so I have this, and I've kind of got a job now where I can have time to kind of think about art, right? So I'm probably luxuriating because I don't have the pressures of a parent.
Yeah.
And so, but it'll take me sometimes hours to come up with an idea.
Can I just tell you, Alex, sorry, I have to tell you about Carole, that she gets up at 5 a.m. and paints.
Wow, okay. You may as well have kids then if you're waking up at 5. No, I'm joking.
That just sounds like the dream to me, you know.
Yeah. No, I think that's really good. And it's really disciplined of you. It's really, really good.
Oh, but I love it. It's obsessive. It's what I'm not good at while I'm doing this podcast is to learn about how do I do the socials and the marketing? Like I know.
Oh, yeah.
I know mentally how to do it. I can't get over my anxious block of it sucking my time away from painting. So I'm in this weird catch-22.
Well, I think, again, this is sort of what I was going back to earlier, is you do slightly quirky things that get you noticed a bit. Quite a lot of the graffiti friends I know, and I'm learning off them now, they got cards they hand out, they chat, they go around chatting to people. You need a real strong will of character to go out there and do that, and to be able to do it every day without worrying about knockbacks, which is quite difficult.
Because you're very exposed doing street art, aren't you?
You are, yeah. Everyone chats to you, and I mean everyone chats to you. From really lovely people to your, you know, like, you know, junkies and stuff. And so you just have to talk to everyone on equal level. But, you know, like there was an example where I was in Melbourne once doing some paste-up street art, and these junkies were, like, trying to steal my paints. So what I did, I showed them how to use the paints for a while, got them involved a bit, and they left me alone. But then I went away and some the people just nicked all the stuff I'd pasted up on the walls and went off with it. So it's like...
Well, you're lucky your nemesis didn't paint over it. So do your kids know that you're an artist, and are you hoping they might follow in your footsteps or...?
I don't mind about that. I love it that they like looking at my art and they like chatting about it. And they're drawing and they're painting. That's lovely. But, you know, I don't care what they do. If they can grow up looking at art and admiring it, that's lovely, and if they want to do it one day, that's great too. But I'm not going to like force it on them either. Their mum loves singing, and so she does a lot of singing with them, and they love that. And I think it's just the home environment's really important for kids. Like, they got to feel loved, they got to feel inspiration. Like, that, you know, they've got to feel interested in something. And if you can create something for them, that's the kind of winner, I think.
What do you find the hardest now, though, with having a family and all the responsibilities? Like, what's your biggest frustration in terms of art and where your journey, or guess? I hate that word. I don't know what you should use, but.
No, I got you. It's just I can't really do much at home.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? While the boys are at home, I can't work. It just doesn't work. If they're out and I'm not out doing street art, I can do some work. But another big frustration is I don't really have a proper space to work in.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important as artists to have a sort of really good setup.
Mm.
And that's another kind of reason I started doing street art too, is I never really had the really good setup for it. But with street art, it's quite flexible. As long as you've got like a bicycle with a cart, you can shove emulsion paints in, spray cans, and cycle down the towpath.
Mm.
You can just get on with it. Whilst if you say into printmaking, you need a studio that has some really good presses in it. Or if you're into screen printing, you need a really good screen printing setup. For instance, I teach screen printing locally, but I've tried to teach exposing the image on the screen and then printing, which I can do that at home because I just set up a tiny room to do it. But when you're in a community center, it just doesn't work. And so you can only teach very, very basic screen printing. So I think what I'm trying to say is that when you want to do things really well as an artist, you need a really good setup.
Yeah.
That can infringe on your teaching as well. So,
have you ever had a studio space locally, Alex?
I did rent at points in my life, but always ran out of money.
Adding renting a studio onto mortgage and everything else is, yeah.
Yeah. Years ago in the 90s, I rented one in Blooming Arts, which changed its name to Fusion, I think it was, which was a great space in the time. And I also used to hire one off Abingdon Road. There's a tiny little space down there near the park. I've forgotten its name now. But when I lived out in Australia, I rented a studio up in Roselle in Sydney, which was a lovely, lovely space. In fact, what was so interesting about that, going back to how do you sort of sell yourself as an artist, within that space, it had connections to galleries. And so if you worked in that studio, you could get exhibitions in these lovely spaces. And so that's a really another important thing when you're an artist about, you know, how do you get exhibitions? Well, usually you've got to wait for someone to find you in the art world if they like your work, which doesn't happen that often. Or you're in a space where they have connections to galleries and
yeah,
you have group shows and then eventually you might have an individual show.
And how do you feel about that network within Oxford? Do you kind of feel plugged into that community, or does, you know, that lack of being in a studio hamper that?
I sort of feel like an outsider, actually. I think street art is sort of, I kind of like the freedom of street art, and I like the fact that people can see your work and you don't have to pay a gallery fees to show your work, or you know when you sell the work they take a cut. I like the fact that I don't have to wait months for someone to say, oh yeah, I like your work, or I don't like your work. You know, if you don't know the right person, you won't go in somewhere. And actually with street art, it doesn't matter where you do the work. People will see your work and people will say stuff, and you can share it on social media. And eventually you get paid work through people who have just seen your stuff, and then you get commissions that way. To tell you the truth, gallery system never worked for me in the whole 30-something years I've been doing art. The one time I did really well was I got two paintings into the Royal Academy Summer Show about 20 years ago.
Wow.
And that felt real, real great. It really did. But I still never really felt connected to any gallery system as such.
What were the paintings of?
They were like small paintings of birds. It's the time when they had that bird flu epidemic.
Avian flu, yeah.
Yeah, I called one H5N1 something in H51 part 2 or something like that. And they were like all little birds. They're like oil paintings of tiny little birds on cubes.
Yeah.
And that worked really well, again, because I thought of a theme on the bird flu. And well, this is another interesting, there used to be a gallery in Summertown, and I was talking to them and they were going, why don't you do small paintings, because you probably get them in the summer show. And the first time in my life I took advice of someone and it actually worked. So they were from the Taurus gallery. I don't know if they're there anymore, but I'd probably say the best advice I've ever had was from the Taurus gallery.
And it worked, but then you didn't feel compelled to continue in that vein.
Yeah, because, you know, like, I find the gallery system really, really hard. It's a really bizarre system only really works if you know the right set of people. I'm really not talking from any resentment here. I'm just talking from life experience.
And it's so sad, because imagine if the writing world was the same, and if any book you wanted to get out there, you'd have to self-publish.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of crazy.
Well, it might be the same. I don't know. I guess there are probably cliques and...
The art world is cliquey, but what I realise is that it's, you do art with people you like, and then things come along because of the people you're with.
Yeah.
So it's cliquey just because of the people you like working with, that these opportunities come along. It's easy to make the mistake it's cliquey because of some class systems. I think it's just more to do with the fact that you start working with people because you like creating and you like sharing that experience. People I work with in Mess Graffiti Crew, they're all doing amazing stuff, right? There's this guy from South Africa who's just brought out a book on African street art. It's by a really big publisher, and he does work all over, and his work's beautiful. There's another chap who lives up at Whitney who does the most fantastic art work, street art, and he did this graphic called posters for this lobby group called... Well, they made a film called Immoral Robots, and it's literally about how nowadays companies are paying coders to make robots make the decisions in the battlefield about who to kill and who not to kill, and the profiling is really dubious. But anyway, he's doing stuff like that. There's another guy called Random Movement, got his own recording studio and does the most sublime street art. And, you know, like, you meet such interesting people, and so the clique and the niche comes from... these wonderful people you're working with, in a way. Does that make any sense? Or?
No, it does. And you can imagine people with similar sensibilities or similar interests get ganged together, and then there's a kind of unity that forms through that, and a group identity.
But as an outsider, that can seem you can't get into that. Do you know what I mean? So I know some street artists are a bit annoyed about not being in certain gangs. It's a bit babyish, actually, but...
No, but you have to remember what it's like being super hungry and trying to break in, right? And if you feel there's like obstacles and you don't want to do a faux pas, but you don't know the lingo yet, you don't know the protocol, you don't know, you know, the dance moves that are required in that environment.
And also the worst thing for us as a human being is to be outside the tribe. That's like...
Of course, yeah, we all want to belong, don't we?
Yeah, but also a little unique, right?
Yeah,
but the thing is, I also feel with art, you're only as good as the last thing you did. I feel like I've got miles to go. I don't think I've made it, and it'll probably take me a lifetime, and I probably still won't have.
No.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question for you, Alex, was where are you going next? Because I really get the sense that you're quite a magpie in terms of things that you, ways that you like working. So what's your, yeah.
Yeah, I do. I like to steal things because I get bored. Well, I'm going on a long weekend to Barcelona, and I've made a whole of... I love doing liner cuts, but I've blown up the liner cuts to AO size. I'm going to do some paste up in Barcelona, so that's my next little...
Wow.
That's my next little idea.
We'll have to follow on Instagram to see your updates.
Yeah. And check out my website, which is asbirdman.net.
Thank you very much, listeners.
And is Birdman from your bird paintings?
Yeah. A lot of the early street art I was doing was of birds. My friend Big Orange M, Manny, he was saying, why didn't you dress up as a bird and do it? I didn't quite get there, but maybe that's my next thing too. Yeah, like lots of plumage.
I love it. You could body paint yourself.
That would definitely draw attention. Yeah, that could be a next trick.
Yeah, but I think that's what it is. It's about having magical tricks that you can conjure up and people are like, ooh, ah, you know what I mean? It's like...
That's a really interesting takeaway for me, because I'm really hoping it's just about art, because then that's the thing I like to do most. Because I have a real open house policy and people go, wow, love that. And I'm like, great, it's yours.
That's amazing.
I love chatting with you, Mr. Alex Singleton. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah? Oh, fantastic. And you were our very first interview.
Amazing. Will I be able to hear the wonderful podcast?
We will email you as soon as it's live.
Oh, that's really exciting.
Oh, yeah, it is. Thank you for listening to Art Musings. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe wherever you heard this podcast. You can join us on Instagram at Art Musings Podcast, or on our website, artmusings.co.uk. And this is where you can find all the links that were mentioned in this episode, bio information on our guest, links to Sally's art website, links to mine, and of course, links to all the socials. Again, thanks for being here. Means the world.